struggle of not knowing, like, if I did something different, would that person have survived? Really stuck with me for a long time. One of the things that I help responders with and help practitioners with is reconnecting to why they're in their job. It is traumatizing to you to go see a lot of blood, to go see a lot of violence. I mean, that is a traumatic event. When you go and are exposed to that, what happens is you have a nervous system reaction that helps you get through it. I try to create an environment where it is safe and supportive for someone to look at their pain and to learn what that pain is trying to tell them.
Welcome to Responder Resilience, along with my co-host, Dr. Stacy Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with EMT and coach, kinesiologist, and Tai Chi Qigong instructor from Victoria, BC, Gabriel Shaw. Gabriel will be talking about finding ease and balance physically, professionally, and spiritually so responders can show up better for themselves and their clients. Take a look at our channel on YouTube. It's Responder Resilience. Like and subscribe if you like what we're doing. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, all the podcast platforms, and our website is ResponderTV.com, all the old episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Gabriel after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Lumley, LCSW EMTB. And we'd like to welcome our guest, Gabriel Shaw, tell you a little bit about him. He's a coach, kinesiologist, and Tai Chi Qigong instructor in Victoria, British Columbia. He works with health professionals like first responders who are in pain and feeling overwhelmed to heal overgiving. We'll have to find out more about what overgiving is and to find ease and balance physically, mentally, and spiritually. Gabriel's mission is to bring people together on the inside and on the outside to help us heal and awaken to our true nature. In his previous career, Gabriel worked in emergency services in both field and hospital settings. Welcome to Responder Resilience, Gabriel.
Hey, thanks a lot, David and Stacy. I'm really happy to be here and really excited to get a chance to speak to your audience and really grateful for the great work you guys are doing too.
Thank you. So I have a question for you. How did you go from being an EMT and working in hospital settings, emergency departments, and now you manage yoga studios and gyms? How did that happen?
Thanks, Stacy. These are all steps on one's journey. It's so funny to look back and be able to tell a meaningful story, but just as it often happens, you just kind of, you know, end up stumbling into what is meant that is right for you. The first career I had was as an EMT, and that was really out of a desire to be of service, mm-hmm. be helpful for people, and I always had a very nurturing and a health-focused side of myself. And so that's what really drew me to being an EMT. Mm-hmm. And I worked in a variety of settings there, as you mentioned, and we can talk more about that. But the whole time as being an EMT, that whole time I always had a practice in martial arts and in Tai Chi and in Qigong and in meditation, and spent a lot of time while I was becoming an EMT and being an EMT and beforehand studying different types of spiritual paths, Taoism, mm-hmm. Buddhism, Christianity, and different health practices as well, from Qigong to meditation, etc. And so in becoming an EMT, I felt that was a really great decision for me. It brought a lot of meaning into my life. It helped let me help a lot of people, and it helped me live more aligned with my purpose. However, during my work as an EMT, I realized really quickly a few things about it. The first thing I realized was that I wasn't really in a position to make as big of an impact as I wanted to make. A lot of the people who I was working with or already had made lifestyle changes that were well beyond the scope of what I could address in one call, as many of us struggle with that in the responder field. We know that. And so wanting to make a bigger impact with people a little bit earlier on, preventative, and help them make that lifestyle changes was what inspired me to go back to school. The other part of that too was that I was always, like I said, had a Tai Chi martial arts background, and I was looking to combine my wellness, spirituality, wholeness background I had from Tai Chi, Kung Fu, Qigong, meditation, with my kind of Western science helping people perspective that I had as an EMT. And so kind of those two things were a combination of why I decided to go to school for kinesiology, which is the study of human movement and exercise physiology, to try to kind of combine those two things. That's similar to the work I do now. In combining those two things, that's what led me to work in martial arts and yoga studios, and that has eventually led me to doing the work I do now, which is really as an embodiment coach, working with health practitioners, first responders, to reconnect with themselves the same way I had to. Another important part of that journey too is just realizing the negative, just like the stressful aspects of our jobs as a responder. I was really lucky very early on in my career to be exposed to vicarious traumatization training and compassion fatigue training, where I got to receive training in how to avoid vicarious trauma, avoid compassion fatigue. And in doing that training, I saw a lot of people that had been in the career a lot longer than I had been and what they were struggling with. And that was enough for me to say, just with the values I had on prevention and my own health longevity from, you know, that other side of the wellness spectrum where I come from, that led me to decide this is maybe not the longest career for me. What I didn't realize was how much that early training was going to play in the back of my mind as I kept my education to come back later to what I'm doing now, which is helping people who are traumatized by their job, to help people who are burnt out from that to recover. So some of that early training is helps me do that. So that's a little bit about the story of how I got to where I am.
Great. And we were talking offline, and I'd love for you to share more. Now, you're talking about how you've been involved with the Burning Man event for a decade or so. Can you talk a little bit about your role there and how that plays into your whole story?
I definitely can. Yeah. And it's a big one. It's a big piece for me. So, so it's been 10 years now of volunteering with the Burning Man organization as an EMT and as a supervisor, which is how I volunteer now. And, of course, the event has spanned a long period. So that's over, you know, over 12 or 13 years of contributing to the event that 10 years has happened. And I've worked really in a variety of settings. It's really cool. It's a really cool event. It's a really big event. If somebody is an EMT or provider and is looking to contribute and try out something different, it's really a different experience than you're going to get anywhere else. Being out there in the desert, in the heat, in the elements, in the massive events, in the fire. I know you work with a lot of firefighters. The firefighters, they get to work out there helping things burn. It's kind of a different thing for firefighters usually. So it's a really cool event for all those areas. And it's been really cool for me to get exposed and learn from a lot of different providers who have different experience than I have, and to learn from them, which has been really, really phenomenal. A few things have happened. As you can imagine, at that event, we see a very, very wide variety of incidents. And in volunteering for that event, I have seen and responded to a lot of things that have really been traumatic, that have caused me a lot of difficulty, from overdosing patients to injured patients, et cetera. In 2017, I was working on what's called a rapid intervention team, which is a team that is stationed inside of a burn perimeter, helping protect participants from a burning structure. When a Burning Man participant decided to run into the seven-story structure fire.
Wow.
And I was the first responder to that scene and did my best to care for this person. And it was just one of these situations which a lot of us can empathize with, that they just don't prepare you for in school, in training, training that you can do.
Right.
And the struggle of not knowing, did I do the best I could do? Like, if I did something different, would that person have survived? Really stuck with me for a long time after that. And not only that, but just the echoes of the sights and the sounds laid in my memory for a long time after that as well, caused me a lot of anxiety, caused me relationship struggles. I mean, this is also on top of a career also of seeing a bunch of things too. So it's hard to say one event, but And it caused a separation with a long-term partner who insisted that I get some help, but I didn't. My organization offered some help and I didn't. And partially just from this avenue of, like, you know, you're just doing your job. You're doing your job. You know, here doesn't need any credit. Tough it out sort of perspective. It took me a while to even realize that was an area of myself that needed to get help. But through doing a lot of healing around that event and others, I have really learned the kind of shame, the kind of trauma, the pain that a lot of us hold inside. That a lot of us hold, and not being able to share that, not being able to express it, not being able to heal from it, is what causes people to make devastating decisions like this gentleman made that night. And so now I'm really dedicating myself to helping people shed those layers so that
they was he a responder?
No, he was not a responder, but okay. I didn't know from responding the shame and the guilt that he was dealing with that caused him to make that decision.
When it comes to occupational cancer exposures, members of the fire service are some of the highest risk professionals nationwide. Firefighters Against Cancer and Exposures, also known as the FACES Foundation, is an advocacy organization established to bring awareness, resources, and peer support to responders in need of additional help in battling potential cancer diagnoses or critical concerns. The FACES Foundation was established by a national alliance of first responders to offer supplemental resources for firefighters. One of its core initiatives is cancer awareness in the form of prevention and early detection, supporting vigilance about occupational cancers and cancer recurrence through our national Get Checked Now campaign. Also, the FACES Foundation publishes a major public catalog of resources for the many areas of need, including information on clinical and mental health therapies, benefits and compensations, funding sources and financial strategies. For more information, please visit the FACES website at facesusa.org.
So from your own personal experience of struggling with trauma, really, and learning that you needed to heal, now you have come full circle and you're helping the healers heal or the responders heal.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it's my pleasure to do so. It's a big mission in my life to do so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned overgiving earlier is kind of a funny thing. Some people don't know what that is, but I think a lot of us know if we think back on the reason that we're giving. One of the things that I help responders with and health practitioners with is reconnecting to why they're in their job to begin with.
Right.
And from a lot of us, that comes from, on one hand, the healthy side is a real desire to help, a service orientation. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but a mission, a personal mission that I believe comes from our soul. That's why we're here.
Sure.
That we're trying to fulfill. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's our overgiving or the unhealthy reason that we got into that. So for me, a lot of that unhealthy reason came from wanting to get attention, wanting to get the attention and affection of my parents, which I never could get enough of being from a large family growing up. But if I could come in as a peacemaker, as a caretaker, then I learned that through helping others, I could get the attention that I craved. And then what that led me to was a career where I was giving, giving, giving from a place of actually trying to appease a hole inside of me. And what that left is burnout, anxiety, a little bit of not even that excited about having new clients, because then you're just giving, giving more without healthy boundaries. And I think this is where a lot of people come in, health practitioners, responders. That's kind of the unhealthy side, that overgiving side of how they can come. And sometimes that unhealthy side can create a shadow that overshadows the mission that they're here to do. So not only do you end up feeling a sense of burnout, but you also end up feeling a sense of, I really feel like I have more to give, but I feel stuck and not giving what I'm really here to do. And so that's what I try to help people with, both from a trauma healing perspective, but also from a soul work perspective of trying to bring forward what they have forward.
Wow. And I love the fact that you're helping responders reconnect with their purpose, because, you know, so many of us have lost that connection and knowing of, you know, why are we doing this? Like, you know, at one point we loved doing it. There was really nothing we'd rather do, but you do see a lot of burnout, a lot of people who've been put through institutional abandonment or other situations where they're like, I'm just going to show up and take care of what I got to take care of. And that's
right.
all I'm going to do.
Go through the motions.
Yeah. Well, Gabriel, let's talk a little bit about this, if you're comfortable talking about it. And that's, you know, when you were on your healing journey, what helped you to get through the burnout and other challenges you were having with trauma, exposure to trauma?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there are a few things that are really worth noting. I mean, I feel very blessed because I really got started in Tai Chi and Qigong very young. It was a part of a Kung Fu school that I started when I was 13, and I was always really heavily interested in that. So I really have had a practice for 20 years now of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I come from a family of anxious people. And in fact, many of my siblings and relatives are medicated for anxiety. And I never have been. And so even though anxiety was a problem for me and something that eventually triggered my healing journey, that Tai Chi and Qigong was really a way of always letting the steam out. So I think, you know, Stacey, you were talking about earlier offline, your yoga practice and how that was helpful for you.
Yeah.
And so for me, that is really important that we have coping strategies that are healthy coping strategies to kind of shed off a lot of that what we get compressed with, that a lot of that pressure that gets built up. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing that I had. That was a big healthy coping mechanism that I always had, was the Tai Chi and Qigong practice, which I wouldn't say was necessarily healing in terms of the trauma healing perspective, but it was really relieving in terms of letting a lot of that pressure out so I didn't explode. Then a lot of things that have been helpful for healing is, I mean, doing a lot of my own trauma work, my own inner child work. A few different tools I can mention really have helped with that. Parts work, and there's a few different ways to do that, but internal family systems is one way.
Yeah.
Traumatic experiencing. Coming from an embodied person, I'm a very physical person from my Tai Chi background, to my kinesiology degree, to my work now. So having a somatic experience, especially I was somebody who was really stuck in my head, and I work with people who are now a lot in their head. And a lot of us are, because especially the people who are like Western science, Western medical trained, we're trained that, you know, we need to kind of know the answers oftentimes. And that is always a puzzle going up here. I was kind of disconnected from my heart and disconnected from my emotions. And as I work with people who are like that now, and the somatic experiencing can be really, really helpful, because it's almost a shortcut to access those emotions by getting into the body. And so I work a lot with somatic sensations, embodiment training. Breath work has been a huge aspect of my training as well, my healing journey, having that. There are different types of breath work. Some people might be familiar with Wim Hof. I work with another gentleman at Breath Army who does a few different types of breath work that has been really helpful for me and that I've learned from my teachers.
I want to take it a little further. I want to pick your brain about first responders, you know, being exposed over the years to trauma, you know, seeing people who are ill, responding to suicides, emotional distress, domestic violence. Do we actually absorb and build up that trauma in our body? What would you say about that?
I would say we do, and I would say on two accounts. So for the people who are listening who are a little bit, you know, skeptical about energies, let's say, or whatever, which I am too, and I have been most of my career, mm-hmm. There is a very more clear-cut explanation for that, and this is how I work with people in a somatic sense, is that when you encounter a traumatic situation, okay, so I used this term earlier, vicarious trauma, which mm-hmm. I don't actually like, but people use it in the field, but I don't actually like it because there's nothing vicarious about it. If you are responding to a suicide, to a domestic violence situation, to a significant physical trauma, that is traumatizing to you. You know, as apes with a limited psychology, we're really not prepared to over and over again be exposed to this type of disaster.
Right.
So it is traumatizing to you to go see a lot of blood, to go see a lot of violence and that kind of thing. That is a traumatic event. And so when you go to that and are exposed to that, what happens is you have a nervous system reaction mm-hmm. that helps you get through it. Okay? Because you have to kind of cope, you have to live. And if you see a lot of violence, there is in some way that's a threat to you. And you just have to think about that in the plains of Africa, right? If you see a lot of violence, you have to think that could be a war, could be a predator situation, whatever. Mm-hmm. There is a threat to yourself, so therefore you have to have a fight or flight and also somewhat of a shutdown to the emotions because you got to get through it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your brain has that reaction. Especially in a lot of us, and it happened to me, and I think it happens to the people, you get better at doing that, actually, better at dissociating because you have to keep...
Right, compartmentalizing. You shut out the emotional reaction.
And then what that does is it's associated to a physical tension in your body as well. So your brain then signals to your body that say, cleanse these muscles, work these muscles, hold, compartmentalize here. And so you start to get more tension in the body as a response to that. And actually that tension starts having you move in ways that are habitual to that tension as well. This is where a lot of chronic pain comes from in the area of first responders. A lot of them suffer chronic physical pain as well.
Physical pain, right.
Yeah. Even if people who are really fit listening to this, I don't think they're going to be surprised when I talk about people with back pain or joint pain or things like that. Even if you're really fit and capable, you still have that stiffness that stays in there.
Sure.
Which is how we have compartmentalized. What it has done is our brain has just learned in this situation, I trigger these nerves trigger these muscles, and then you get a chronic nerve
clenching, tensing. Right. Yeah, but a lot of that is emotional.
Yeah.
A lot of it is emotional.
Exactly. So when you get that chronic tension, then that's like what we might call like stored emotional energy. You had emotional response, but you weren't able to discharge it.
No.
So you stored it in your muscles with this chronic tensing, right?
Yes.
And so I work with people, and I think I'm sure you do, Stacy, too, to help people to move into those part of their bodies where they're storing that, express those emotions. And then I work with them to start moving in different ways so we can train new nervous pathways so that they don't. So that is a really just a fundamental physical explanation from how that's stored in us as well. You know,
I find, you know, when people heal from trauma, they'll just spontaneously say, you know, I've just noticed I don't get migraines anymore, or, you know, my sleep is better. You know, my back pain is not as bad as it used to be. And so for me, that's confirmation that, yes, as Bessel van der Kolk's book, the title of it being The Body Keeps the Score, which is kind of like the Bible for PTSD. If anyone wants to know everything that there is to know from, you know, the neurophysiology all the way to movement therapies to release trauma, you know, that's that book, The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel Vander Kolk really speaks to this. So everything that you're talking about, Gabriel, is now, it's becoming more and more common knowledge, you know, but people need to know that, mm-hmm. that maybe my, this body ache that I can't explain because I didn't fall down the stairs or hurt myself on the job or whatever. Why do I have this body ache? And so maybe to look a little deeper into unresolved emotional stuff or just stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of the time how people come to me is they have persistent pains, persistent aches, persistent stiffness, and they have tried everything. They've been to the physio, right. They've been to the acupuncture, they've been to the chiropractor. Mm-hmm. And mostly what I work with them to uncover is the emotions that are underneath that pain, the psychological elements, the trauma right. that would be underneath yeah. that pain. Once we relieve that, it's almost like the pain just becomes so much easier to deal with, or the movements or the exercises or whatever they need to do. It all becomes the most trivial or easiest thing in the world to deal with, because mm-hmm. there was something mm-hmm. they were holding on to that was right. not allowing them. If I let go of my pain, then I would have to deal with my anxiety.
Right. Right.
So yeah. that's a very common thing. And that's really what I help people with.
But that's usually unconscious though. Most people don't realize that. If they were to address their physical pain, and you hear that from massage therapists, you know, yeah. like they'll be massaging a particularly painful area, and the patient feels sad or yeah. angry,
yeah,
scared,
yeah,
because that's what's trapped there.
And so what I do is I try to create an environment where it is safe and supportive for someone to look at their pain and to learn what that pain is trying to tell them, what emotion yeah. that pain is trying to bring up for them. And you can go to a massage therapist or you go to a yoga class and you can have sometimes those emotions get triggered.
Yeah.
But if that's not an emotionally regulative environment to be in, then it doesn't necessarily lead to healing. It can sometimes lead to the reverse of wanting to bottle it up more.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what happened during that, you know, yoga session or that trip to the gym, but exactly. you know, all of a sudden this emotion came over me and then there's a resistance to go back.
That's right.
Because they
That's
don't
right.
understand
exactly.
what just happened. So, yeah.
Exactly. Right. And so what I try to do with people is I try to, encourage them to think about how their pain is serving them. What, you know, what the
right.
benefit
the
of it, how, you know, even
yeah.
in ways that they're not, aren't, it's not the easiest. Everything I'm saying is very uncomfortable. It's very difficult,
yes.
You know, and usually I don't say this to people, but we work on it together. It's very difficult to think something that you really prefer not to have is serving in some capacity for
Correct.
You.
Correct. Right. It's there for a reason, right? Can we look at how this is helping you? When I have yeah. a client who is resisting something, they don't want to talk about a certain topic, and which is fine. I'll let people do it. But how does that serve you to avoid that?
Right.
You know, like, let's look at the benefit of not talking about that and not addressing
right.
that. Because there is a benefit to them. And
that's right.
and I, what I find is once we discuss the benefit, then they're more inclined to look at, you know, well, how is this hurting me?
So. Right, right. Exactly. There's becomes more space. When you start looking at the benefit, there's becomes more space.
Well, it's there's like no resistance, right? So you roll with the person's resistance.
That's right.
Roll
you gotta
with
go
it.
With
Just
the
give it to them. Give them permission. You don't want to talk about that. That's okay. But let's look at how that's a win for you on some level.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to roll with the person's resistance. That's a big part of what I do. And also in a physical sense from Tai Chi as well, rolling in that physical resistance, just like we talked about that, the physical is related to the emotional, to the psychological.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
So I roll with that resistance. And it's the same thing, you know, what you said about the resistance, it once you allow them the resistance, it allows them a little more space to look at the other side.
Right.
It's the same thing with your pain. When you start to think with your pain, what is this trying to tell me?
Sure. Right.
Then all of a sudden, right, what is screaming at you can soften its voice a little bit. And it can say, oh, okay. You know, it's almost like your back is saying, whew, oh, he's finally listening. Okay, now we can have a conversation.
Right.
But if there's no conversation being had, then it's just screaming, you know, and it's got to keep screaming. And so we can often get a lot of space by listening.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, the key thing being that it's a conversation that a lot of times we disconnect from our body and think that you know, whatever's going on down there, it's a random thing or it's externally caused. But what's fascinating is that, you know, more and more we're starting to agree that there's a two-way conversation going on, and that if we can listen more to the body, it can have amazing benefits.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Gabriel, I have a question for you about, probably saw it on your website. And the question is, what's the difference between doing a workout and a work in?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. It's kind of like what you just said about listening to your body, really, is that a workout is like trying to expel energy.
Right.
In a way, right? And it's like I'm tired of being in this container, and so I want to get out. You know, I'm going to try to work out. You know, you can think about it as like a massage therapist or whatever. If you were saying like, hey, work this out, would be like saying like, hey, fix this in a way.
Right. Get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Yeah.
Then the way people tend to choose are like alcohol, drugs, numbing. Like that's
right.
A psychological defense.
Right.
So then you escape the discomfort.
That's right.
So how is that different?
And a lot of people, and a lot of people actually use exercise as a numbing as well, you know, and where they're, you know, you're running on the treadmill but listening to the loud music or something, or watching the news or whatever, right? Or even if you're just working so hard, you're just trying to work that hard because that's stimulating against something in you, so that you don't have to look at what you're running from.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. I just did a 50K ultra marathon a couple weeks ago, and the people I asked, hey, what do you think about that? Like, what's your favorite part of this event?
Yeah.
You'd be shocked at the number of people who said the finish. And to me, that just says, okay, you're running from something.
Right. It's
you
not,
know?
Yeah. It's not the
really
destination,
absorbing
it's
in the
journey.
Instead of absorbing in the experience. And so what I would say is a work in is where instead of trying to necessarily expel something out, now don't get me wrong, exercise is much more productive usually than, you know, going to drink alcohol or something like that. And working out is usually a really good, you know, healthy thing to do. So I'm not trying to give everybody that. But
right.
A work in is to say, okay, what is going on inside? And let me listen. Let me use my movement as a way of bringing forward what is from within, so I can pay closer attention to it, so I can learn from it. Another way that you might, instead of fixing, so the other thing is a fixing or a working out. If that massage therapist was going to work something out, it would be like a fixing. A fixing is usually very much a top down. I'm going to come with the answer and I'm going to tell you how many sets or reps you need to do or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And in a work in, I would say is from the bottom up. okay, body, how many of this do you want to do? Okay, body, what needs to be worked? What muscles need to work from your perspective? That's another big thing. Part of what I do with people is I just give them the permission to say, hey, what makes this feel better? Okay, can we do more of that movement?
Right.
Are you surprised how surprising that is to a lot of people? A work in is often emotional, psychological, as well as physical.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually what I kind of call it, like coin, you know, a work in versus a workout. Instead of trying to distract ourselves,
right,
I'm trying to
engage
embody,
with it, embrace it, yeah. Accept it, learn from it.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had one more thing. Another way you could also view it is coordination training. So for people who are like real muscular, they're into the gym, who are listening or something like that, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are probably familiar with compound exercises and how compound exercises can have more bang than more simple exercises. So another thing you can think about it is a big way I train people is using coordination training. So in other words, the exercises that you're doing from just a more physical perspective, they should be challenging your ability to coordinate multiple different muscle areas and different joints.
Right.
If they're doing that, then they're requiring your mind to be online. Your mind has to be really engrossed in the task. So you could also just say that's a work in as well. If you're doing something that doesn't require that coordination training, well, that's fine, but then you're not working your mind. You're only working your body. And why do half of a thing, in
sure.
my opinion?
Right.
From personal experience, I'm actually preferring to do more workouts where it incorporates different body parts, different movements, muscle groups, and it does require to engage the brain in order to pull off the exercise. So
mm-hmm.
it's
exactly.
Interesting. You just kind of put a reason to it. I didn't realize why I was leaning towards that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
And I also love that you're talking about asking the body, like, you know, because the body has a lot of wisdom. It's got a lot of information for us.
Yeah.
And we, again,
right.
so often forget that it is there kind of available to us to have that conversation. So it's a cool
mm-hmm.
perspective.
People don't think of it that way. You know, they don't think of their body as an entity that they can explore, ask questions, learn from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible then, as you do this work in to transform pain into something more positive? Like, so will you find, so you go inward, you discover that, something's amiss. What do you do with that? How do you help people with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the first thing about it is, a lot of people will say, hey, listen to your body. That's just mentioned what we were talking about a moment ago.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will say, hey, listen to your body, but they're not really educated in terms of what that actually means, how to actually do that. And number two, it really does rely on having a container. Sometimes we can provide this for ourselves, but most often we need some help. A container to where when you are hearing what the body is saying, you can stay with that material,
uh-huh.
often very uncomfortable. Right?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing how I work with people on that pain is to just create a container where it's safe for them to look at, to listen to what the body is saying. Because obviously, oftentimes the body is saying something very uncomfortable. And that's why, hence why the pain, right? And hence why the pain. And the uncomfortable thing the body is saying often is, number one, it could be, hey, we have this stored emotion, like we talked about before. So then by using movement or breath or dance, even exercise, this can be a power, or shaking, a qigong, can be a powerful way to, once you know that that emotion is there, to now start to move some of that energy. You could look at it as simple as what I said before about activating new nervous pathways, training your body to do different. Or you could look at it a little more alternative healing, like you're releasing stuck energy. So number one, I find the first thing I do with people is really help them release the stuck energy in their body. And when they have that release of that stuck energy, there's usually a new awareness that's accompanied by that. The awareness is around how they had to be in order to survive, either in their career or as a young child. Once they have that awareness, you know, they don't have to keep participating in that over and over again. They can adapt a new pattern, which can adapt a new movement pattern as well, which can transform that pain into pleasure. You can transform that pain into capacity, ability, right? So that's number one. The other thing that could often happen is that that pain is there to tell them that they're not living in alignment.
Okay.
This can be very uncomfortable as well, and this is kind of where the soul work avenue or the rediscovery of themselves comes in. And what I do is that often that pain is there saying, hey, you're not – there's a part of yourself that is trying to encourage you to live more fully in this life.
Right.
And you are in doing your day-to-day, in doing what you thought you were supposed to do, in going through that trauma response and going through that old habitual pattern and just doing your job – you're not living in full alignment with what you're here to do.
Yeah.
And then, again, it can be very uncomfortable to look at that, especially many of us.
Oh, sure, right. Yeah, you're on a career path or you're in a relationship, but you're having physical symptoms.
That might be indicating
that you're missing something or you're not looking at the full picture.
That's right.
So,
And with that, a lot of grief work comes in.
Grief work
has been a big part of my practice over the last couple of years for this reason, is because when you start to look at the amount of years that you've spent not embodying your fullest gifts, not being fully alive, there's a lot of grief that comes with that. And so then helping them to listen to their part of their body to help them to find more what's truly aligned for them. This is what I mean about saying like helping people to give their fullest gifts. And this is really part of the reason why, as I did, people are feeling like, even though I'm burnt out, I don't feel like I've really given what I'm here to give. Because there's some part of that they're not, you know, they're just not awakened to yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. And I don't want to end the conversation without bringing this up, because I know it's probably a very big part of what you do. Tell us a little bit about how Tai Chi and Qigong helps with healing.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for that question. You know, it's very similar to some things that we've talked about before. So the first thing is, like, the most important part of a Tai Chi Qigong practice is to let go of where you're stuck. So a lot of it is about, you know, kind of just moving the body and relaxing and opening the joints in ways that help us to, first of all, just become aware of where we're stuck. Mm-hmm. And so I do this in workshops and stuff with people and just by becoming aware of where you're stuck, okay, now I can start to move those areas and I can start to pay close attention. I can start to pay close attention to what comes up when I move that area. So really just moving where you're stuck. And even if you just do that, even if you don't do any of the other healing work, but you spend 20, 30 years taking inventory of where you're stuck and then moving through where you're stuck, you'd be amazed the kind of energetic releases and healing that can come from that.
Sure.
The other thing that it does too is it just slows people down. I mean, especially slowing people down with that work in highly focused aspect of meditative movement. It's just something we don't do very often. So if I tell you to relax where you're stuck and then really, really slow down and pay very, very close attention so you can feel where you're stuck, again, it's amazing what kind of things can come out of that and kind of shifts that can come out of that. And then the third thing that comes out of that is we build power. We build resilience. Mm-hmm. We build resilience by learning how to focus in our center and letting everything else go. That's like focusing in your alignment and letting what's not aligned with you go. We learn how to spread our energy out or open ourselves up literally and figuratively. If you're more open, then you're less likely to take on that energy from people that you're working with on a day-to-day basis, and you're more open to being compassionate and feeling the feelings in yourself and in others that you need to feel as part of your job, as part of your own healing. So those are three really main ways it helps. I mean, number one is just releasing where you're stuck. Number two is slowing down, especially with that high focus. And then number three is building that resiliency through center and expansion.
Thank you. And you've been generous sharing all this information. And tell us where people can find you on the internet, social media, and then do you have any special events or offerings, any courses that you'd like to share about?
Yeah, thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Appreciate y'all having me on. It's a real honor to just get some of this information out there to the people who need it most. So I really hope that it found the right people. People can find me on all the social media platforms, Coach Gabriel Shaw. And I'd love it if they, you know, reached out, let me know they heard this and started a conversation. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Coach Gabriel Shaw. If people look at Coach Gabriel Shaw on YouTube, there are a lot of videos out there for how breath work relates to your back pain, how to do basic Tai Chi exercises for calming down and relaxing, like I was talking about there. A lot of other anatomical explanations are on that YouTube channel, so people can find that.
Great.
If people are feeling burnt out, feeling like they have some stuck energy in their body that's causing them physical pain, or feeling like they're overgiving, then what I would encourage them to do is just go on my website, which is coachgabrielshaw.com, and they can schedule a 30-minute free call where we just kind of discuss the next step that might be most appropriate for them. That's at coachgabrielshaw.com. I also have a couple of courses, and specifically there's one I think a lot of this audience would be find helpful. So we were talking, Stacey, before it came on, about the need to ground and center yourself before work. As a kind of provider, it's crucial that we find ways to ground and center before our work and after our work, so we're not taking a lot of that negative energy on with us. I have a little mini course on this. It's a Qigong course. It's called Energy Tools for Grounding. People can find that at courses.movehealawaken.com. And I create a little coupon code for this event. So if people use the code RESILIENCE in all caps, they can get that course for $10. It's basically a one-hour workshop where I teach them a lot of energy tools that I use for grounding and centering myself before sessions and sessions and after sessions. So I think people, any kind of practitioners, whether they're first responders or other therapists who are listening to this, I think they probably get a lot out of that. Courses.movehealawaken.com. Happy to anybody can contact me, like I said, through social media, Coach Gabriel Shaw, through my website, coachgabrielshaw.com. Happy to hear from anybody.
Fantastic. And it's great that you touched on the fact that therapists might need to be grounding themselves while they're doing what they do as well. So great stuff, Gabriel. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all this cool information. It's been a pleasure, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. You can like and subscribe there. Also, we're on Facebook, Respond to Wellness Inc., bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast platforms, and our website is respondertv.com. All our past episodes and guest information is on there. Until the next episode, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.